Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Today is July 16th, 2009. I'm Rajiv Khanna for immigration.com. This is a community conference call which is being recorded. Please be aware of that. If you don't want your voice to be recorded or your question to be recorded, hang up now. Keep your identities confidential. This call is publicly available, so act accordingly. By doing this call, we have not agreed to become your lawyers. We are doing our best to guide you. As a community service, we will not be held to any advice that we give that turns out to be erroneous because some facts were missing. We try to do our best, but, you know, take it for what it's worth, not anything beyond that. Let me get to the questions that we have, starting with No More Silence. No More Silence is an Indian graduate who's got a bachelor's degree with 11 plus 4 pattern, so basically, it's not a 12 plus 4 pattern like we have in the USA. But he's got 20 years of experience. The question is, can I ever do an EB-2? And the answer is probably not. Because for an EB-2, you either must have a 4-year bachelor's degree or something nearly like that. And you must have 5 years of progressively responsible experience. Or you must have 10 years of experience and something that really makes you very distinct. Some sort of extraordinary accomplishments, or you must have a master's degree. Because you don't have a 4-year bachelor's degree, it'll be difficult for you to go through EB-2. Okay? Next question from DSM918. Their question related to how do you port the priority date? They had heard me mention in one conference call that if your I-140 is approved, you can then take the priority date of that I-140 approval and port it over to any subsequent I-140 you do. So the question was, do the positions have to be similar? And the answer is no, they don't. I'm not talking about AC-21 portability here. That's a different bird altogether. And I've mentioned that several times, I'll do it again. AC-21 portability is a situation in which your I-140 is approved and your 485 has been pending more than 180 days. You can change your job to a similar job and get your green card without having to reapply. What we are talking about is something different. Here you can only take the priority date. When you take the priority date, it can be a totally different job. It can be from EB-3 to EB-2. It can be from software engineer to general manager. It can be anything. Okay? The jobs don't have to be similar at all. For AC-21 485 portability, you've got to have similar jobs. But for I-140 priority date portability, the jobs can be totally different. That's the reason I had advised everybody should file their green card as quickly as possible, even if you are not going to stay with that employer in your mind. If you feel like you're going to change your employment, it still makes sense to get the I-140 approved, okay, so that you can carry your priority date to the next job. Even if the employer revokes the I-140, you still keep the priority date as far as I can understand the law. Okay, so next question is, can the old priority date still be used even though a new application may have been started with a new employer? Yes, of course. That's the whole idea. Number two, my wife's company's lawyers, Fragoman, initiated her green card process in mid-December. Seven months later, it has only reached the stage where they send the request for prevailing wage. Is this normal? Well, I don't like to comment about other lawyers' work, but 7 months to prepare a labor certification is not abnormal. Again, it depends upon how people work and how fast you have provided them the documentation they've sought. It's not something that puts me in the alarm range. I mean, in our office, the fastest we can get a labor cert together is maybe about 3, 4 months, 5 months. So 7 months is not that far out of the ordinary. Number three, her 6 years on H-1B expired on December 31st, 2010. Does she have enough time? Well, as long as her application gets filed on or before December 31st, 2009, she's okay. So it looks like she has enough time. Okay. Next question, Sai for green card regarding 485, H-1, and H-4. In his case, there's a very interesting situation. His I-140 was denied. There was an I-140 485 pending together. This is the way I understood your case to be, sir. And if I'm wrong, you can, of course, correct me, Sai. Your case was that your I-140/485 was filed together. Later on, the I-140 was denied. You filed a motion to reopen. That was also denied. You filed an I-140 that was approved. Now, what has happened is that USCIS says that they have reopened the case and your 485 has been revived and your I-140 is being put together with that, but your family's I-140/485 is still showing denial. Well, sir, let me tell you something. I think there's something wrong here. My problem is this. I don't think they can use that pending 485 for the new approved I-140. I'll tell you why. The way INS has looked at the situation is this. Let's say you file I-140/485 today. Your I-140 gets denied tomorrow. According to INS, the moment the I-140 gets denied, the 485 is out the window. It's gone. Unless on a motion to reopen or appeal, they reopen the I-140. Okay? So, let's say, take the same hypothetical, I-140/485 filed together. I-140 gets revoked tomorrow. You file a new I-140. It gets approved premium processing in 2 weeks. Can you then attach it to the 485? And the answer is probably not, because that I-140/485 combo is gone already. So you should be filing new 485. That's what it looks like to me. In your case, a new 485 should be required. But I don't know what's going on. Your lawyer can better advise you. I can only tell you what I generically know. Unless INS has changed their mind about this, I think there's something weird about this whole situation. Okay? In my view, your 485 would need to be refiled because the earlier I-140/485 combo, the I-140 was denied and that was never reopened. That I-140 is just gone. You just filed a new I-140 later on which got approved. Therefore, I don't think you have a 485. Okay? Please have it confirmed. Next question. Oh, at this point, do I have a chance of using AC-21? Don't use AC-21 because we don't know what the status of your 485 is. Okay. Next question is H1, H4 extension. Oh, wait. As the second I-140 is approved by company B. Yeah, this is a very complicated situation. I'm giving you some very, very quick snap judgments. But you should really be talking with your own lawyers. I'm telling you the general law. I'm telling you what to ask them. In my view, that 485 is gone. You should be filing new 485. H1, H4 question from SAIG going on. H1, H4 extension applied before expiry of present H1, but denied and did appeal. Appeal is pending. As per my advice, they have filed another H1, H4. Got RFE. Client is not giving letter. 33 days to answer. Client wants to apply for H1. Okay. Well, if the client wants to apply for your H1, they can. You're going to have to go outside USA and get a visa stamp, which is okay. That's quite all right. I don't see any problem with that. So if I were you, I would go ahead and apply with the client. And I also see no reason why that H1 RFE cannot be responded to. Okay. We've gotten some approvals without client letters. If your employer has been trying and they're not able to secure it, what can they do? Okay, so they should fight that RFE, in my opinion. But you can, of course, go through the client also, get an H1 approved. Akash001 says, I have a problem. There is some issue about state taxes, which they messed up, and his CPA is trying to get that straightened out with the state so that his taxes are shown as properly paid. So the question is, should I wait to file the N-400 till this situation is resolved? No, sir, I don't think you should. You go ahead and file your N-400. And if INS questions you on this issue, you can provide a letter from your CPA as well as copies of all the correspondence with the state as well as IRS. Okay. I don't see any reason to wait. Consultant 007, I-140 denied. For labor certification. Okay, this is Rajdeep. This is consultant delivery center. Okay, this is a very strange situation. Company A, Company B. Company A started the labor certification or filed the labor substitution. Okay. Okay, then company B came and bought over company A. Okay, INS denied or they said this issued an RFE saying that company A cannot pay salary as it no longer exists. But, and your lawyers are right, I think if they have proven that company A was bought over by company B, that's no problem. You should be able to get your I-140 approval. Because there is a doctrine in law called successor in interest. Successor in interest. Successor in interest means when one company takes over substantially all assets and liabilities of the other company, they can then become the de facto employer. Therefore, it's under negotiation law to do that. Okay. Whether my approve, it should be approved in my opinion from what you have given me. Should I travel? You should be using your advance parole to travel because, I don't know what's going to happen with your RFE. Okay, if you travel and in your absence the case gets denied, then you don't have a 485 and you don't have an advance parole. Okay. Also, if I file perm with another company and file new I-140, can I still link my 485? Yes, you can, as long as the I-140 is not denied. Once the I-140 is denied, that 485 is gone. I don't think you can link it with anything. That's my understanding. Rajdeep Singhan. I have EAD but currently maintaining my H-1B status. He's got an RFE on his pending 485. So he has some questions. The fact that I received RFE, does that mean USCIS is reviewing my 485 and they'll give me an approval as soon as the dates are current? Yes, they're doing pre-adjudication. And chances are they should be able to give you your green card as soon as the priority date becomes current. The more important question is, can they ask me more questions? And the answer is yes. There is nothing in law that says you can't get another RFE, even though the case has been pre-adjudicated. But chances of that happening are small. Okay? So chances are, when the priority date becomes current and your case has been pre-adjudicated, you should get your green card. Next question. My son was born in Europe. Is it possible that he catches 45 before me? No. No. Your son is... your application must be approved in order for any of your dependents' application to be approved because they ride on your status. So there is no way that I can think of that they will approve your son before they approve you. validity of my current H-1 expires in August 2010. Is getting H-1 extensions difficult? Yeah, these days, of course. I mean, is it equally difficult as new H-1? I mean, we are getting them. I don't see any problem. It's just that paperwork has increased. We have to provide more paperwork. Do we need ultimate client's letter for H-1 extension or a contract? What should be the validity of such contracts? You should read my article that I have written. If you go to my blog, you will see I have posted a link on how we got an H-1 approval without an end client letter, and it refers you to very short article that I wrote basically addressing this issue, and it's being published by American Bar Association, American Law Institute. It just talks about how to deal with the situation of getting a letter from the end client. Okay? So I think that should be okay. I don't see that as a big deal. How can congressmen help? Well, congressmen can help you with logistical problems or with stuck cases that are stuck because of bureaucratic issues, but they can't change the law for you, right? Next question is from Cool DC Guy. Cool DC Guy says, look, I got a reckless driving ticket back in 2000, paid $600 fine, license suspended. Is this going to be a problem for my citizenship? But look, this was 9 years ago. I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think if you have not had other problems, Mohan, you should be fine. When I went for my citizenship, I had plenty of driving, traffic tickets and driving tickets and speeding tickets. So if that were a big deal, I mean, you would never get, a lot of people would never get citizenship. So I think it should be fine. But if you have a repeat issue, because reckless driving probably becomes a misdemeanor. And you know, if reckless driving becomes a repeating issue, then you've got a problem. But one ticket 9 years ago, I don't think it's going to be an issue. Go ahead. Okay? Apply for citizenship. Thrust2_08. My brother is a green card holder and is married. Wife is in India. He's applying for citizenship. Should he apply as married? Of course, he is married. His wife visited and her husband saying that they were unmarried. That's fraud. That's fraud. Eventually, when he gets his citizenship, he should apply for her green card, stating that they are married, and you will need to apply for a waiver, okay, that she has committed fraud against the U.S. government. I mean, obviously, if she was married, why she was, she's saying she's unmarried. So, no, there is no way he should apply as unmarried. He is married, okay? AC-21 and green card questions. So, case has been pending for over 180 days. I-140 approved in September 2008. Okay. I wanted to use AC-21. How do I file paperwork for AC-21? What conditions have to be satisfied? Well, I think we have a lot of articles on this on my blog. Please read my blog under the heading of I-485. You'll get a lot of information there. Can our firm help? Sure, we'll be happy to assist you with your AC-21, no problem at all. We've done many, many, many cases like this. What are the chances of getting AC-21 approval? That's impossible for me to say. I'll have to look at the two job descriptions. Your labor certification job description and the job offered. The titles, the salaries. I'll have to look at these things before I can tell you what are the chances. If the jobs are similar, sure, no problem at all. Will there be any issues going forward till I get my green card, as I feel priority date of October 2003 will take some time to come? Well, you can always do repeat AC-21s also. Let's say you joined first employer, did an AC-21, 2 years later you decided you wanted another job, or 6 months later you decided another job. If the job is still similar, you can go ahead and change it to another AC-21. So, you know, that's not a problem at all. Is there any other process to get the GC faster? Well, yeah, if you can do an EB-2, I think it's worth it. You can then transfer the priority date and interfile the I-140 to tag on to the existing 485. So if you have a new employer who does a new case for you and it requires EB-2 type qualifications, you should definitely do it. Okay? It's worth the time, I think. Jasmine00. She's on US on L-1B, which is expiring in Feb 2010. Current company is filing for an extension. H-1 quota is still open, so they are filing an H-1B to another company. I want to continue working. My intention is to begin working on H-1B starting April 2010. If my H-1B gets approved, what will happen to my L-1 visa? Well, there are two circumstances. Your H-1 can be approved with a change of status, or you can request consular processing. You can say, don't give me a change of status whenever I'm ready to get an H-1. Approve my H-1, but I'll get it stamped later. So you can then get it stamped over the next few months whenever you like. Okay? That's one way to do it. But if you do it with a change of status, you are immediately in H-1 status. Your L-1 is gone then. Okay? So also, if your H-1 start date is within the next 6 months, you can give a specific date. So let's say if I file on January, I can give a date anywhere, start date anywhere from in the next 6 months. I can't do it more than 6 months ahead. So in January, I can say my start date will be May 1st. Okay, if you want to start the work in April, count back 6 months from April, which brings you to what, October? October, November, yeah, somewhere there. So you can file in October, ask for a start date of April 1st, you know, something like that. But if you want to be outside the quota and do right now, you can apply for the H-1 and just ask for consular processing. Don't ask for a change of status. Of course, you can't have you can have a problem if you have an H-1 change of status as well as L-1 extension going on at the same time. I think that's your best solution. Just do it with a consular processing. But again, you know, discuss it with your lawyers also. I don't know what they would suggest. That's what I would recommend to you. Swati 159. Applied for a change of status from H-4 to H-1B. Husband and I are separated, filing for divorce. if I start my divorce, will it cause any problem getting H-1B approval? Well, it shouldn't, because, well, if the divorce is finalized before October 1st, which is when the H-1 quota... Well, first of all, I'm a little confused. See, right now we don't have a quota issue. So, you should... Yeah, but it still begins on October 1st. Right, you're right. It still begins on October 1st, so you have to maintain status till October 1st. And if you get divorced before October 1st, then you're no longer on H-4. Okay? So... And in most situations, I mean, divorces take a long time, 6, 8, 10 months easily. So, I mean, you have to discuss this with your divorce lawyers. Ideally, you should not get divorced before October 1st. So file for divorce, it's okay, but don't actually get divorced till October 1st. Okay. Reina, thanks in advance for, okay, I am EB3 applicant with 485 pending, ED of April 2002. If I leave to USA and go to Canada as my permanent residency will expire there, will my US green card continue? Yes, it can, as long as the employer is willing to hold the job open for you, and as long as they have a good explanation, if asked, they may never get asked, if asked, as to why they are letting you go when supposedly they're supposed to have a permanent job for you. You see my point? If there's a permanent job, then who is going to do it in your absence? And if there's a good answer to that question, no problem at all. Certainly, you can do consular processing. You can keep your I-140, 485 alive. Your 485 alive, that's no problem at all. Okay, just make sure you keep your advance parole or your H-1 visa active. Next question is from cytokines, deportation processing. Sorry, sir, beyond my expertise. I don't deal with deportation cases. Our work is 100% with legal immigration. So my knowledge of deportation, et cetera, is very, very limited. Okay? I don't really want to hazard a guess about what her best chances are, so I'm going to let that go. Arhan wants me to comment on Newfield memo, which says, are you deportable even if valid AOS is pending? I have written on my blog what my opinion is. There is no change in law. It is basically INS asserting that authorized period of stay is not to be considered to be a God-given right. It is something that INS has given you as a dispensation, as a favor. Don't treat it as a right. I think this memo has been phrased very poorly. Even though the law is correct, the statement of the law in the abstract is correct, as a matter of application, they cannot take away your AOS just because they don't like your face. There's got to be a reason for it. Okay? Most of the AOS problems have occurred in the context of firearm laws. So if you ever do a search for on a legal database for, you know, AOS problems, you'll see almost all of them were in the context of firearm laws, where somebody on AOS had a gun in their possession and they are not supposed to, because then they are not, you know, in that particular state you have to be a citizen or you have to be a legal resident before you can get a firearm. You know, in those kind of circumstances, it has become an issue whether AOS means full status, legal status, or is it just something in between. So it seems to me to be addressing that issue, but it comes across very poorly. And I think at some point they're going to have to address that memo. God knows I have such little time over the next few weeks. I would love to send them an email, a letter on behalf of the community. And I will, I think, whenever I get a little time. It's a 51-page memo. I have to read the whole thing all over again, make sure that my understanding is correct. Their phrasing is very poor, and they should go back and change it. For now, I would not lose any sleep over this. That's the way I'm approaching it. Next question, H1 to H4 stamping. I think I need a little break. My throat is drying up. Let me see if there's any questions from people. Let's open the call. Anybody who has questions related to, or let me rephrase that. Anybody who has questions on what I have discussed so far. Follow-up questions on your own postings. Don't ask me anything else. So if you have posted and you have follow-up questions, Let me address them now for you. Just one second. Folks, if you want to talk with me, press star 6.
Rajiv?
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Yeah, I have the post number 3 here, DSM 918.
Just remind you what the question is.
It was about, you know, just applying for the green card as such, because you can always use your priority date whenever you want.
Right. Right. Yeah. You mean the I-140 priority date passover? You know, take
Yeah, pretty much. Is it the I-140 passover, priority date passover, or is it the one when you apply for your perm? Is that the date?
What happens is, your priority date is the date you applied for perm.
Okay.
So let's say today you applied for perm, this is your priority date.
Mm-hmm.
4 months later, your perm got approved.
Okay.
You still have nothing. Okay, 6 months later, your I-140 got approved.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have a priority date, once the I-140 is approved. But the priority date is today, is the date you filed the case.
Okay, but like you said, if I switch companies, or you know, I probably forego my I-140 as well as my perm. So when you apply for a new perm, it'll be for a different job, but you can still use that date?
Correct.
Okay, that's all I needed. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, no problem at all. Good luck.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Sai.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Sai.
Yeah, my question is number 4, and here I wanted to bring to 2 points.
I'm listening.
Okay. One is it's not a combined filing like 140 and 485. I filed separately. It's not like saying what it called.
Correct my facts if I'm wrong. Your facts are you filed an I-140 first.
Yes.
While it was still pending, you filed a 485.
Right, it was applied like 6-7 months before.
Doesn't matter. Then your I-140 got denied.
Right.
Then you filed a motion to reopen the
I-140. Right.
That also got denied.
Right.
Then you filed a second I-140.
Right. Before filing the second I-140, I filed an appeal for the old for 140.
You filed an appeal on the old I-140. Did the appeal get granted?
No, it was pending.
It was what?
Pending.
It's still pending.
Yeah, it was pending before this second 140 got approved.
Now, see, I'm a little confused now because I don't know what INS did. Did they go back and say, well, even the case that was in appeal, we are reconsidering it, we are approving it? I don't know what they did. So it's difficult for me to comment. I gave you the general law. Your lawyer should do the follow-up.
And the second point I want to bring to your notice that my EAD got approved recently, 1 week back.
That doesn't mean anything.
So just I want to reconfirm.
Yeah, my concern is, once an I-140 is revoked, the 485 that was attached or denied, the 485 that was attached to it is also gone. You see what I'm saying? So for INS to keep that 485 alive, they would have to approve that I-140 on which the 485 was based. Okay? So that's the way I understand the law to be. I want this followed up because it could happen 6 months later they come back and say, oh, sorry, your 485 is gone. We made a mistake.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Thank you. I just want to make sure.
Yep. No, I understand your situation.
Thank you.
Good night.
Hi, Raju.
Yes, sir. Hello.
Yes, hi. This is regarding question 13.
Just remind me what the question is.
This is regarding I'm an EB3 applicant and have 485 pending. And actually, I'm planning to go to Canada to live there next year, or mid of next year.
Yeah, I remember. I just talked about it.
Yeah, so if I just simply go there without doing anything and just assume my green card will continue, is it going to be any adverse effects in the future or not?
No, it shouldn't. And like I said, as long as there's an explanation for why the employer is letting you leave when they have a permanent job, and as long as you keep your advance parole alive, you should have no problem.
Yeah, but advance parole will expire like end of next year. And I
come back into USA, apply for advance parole, get it, and then leave again.
Yeah, so in order to come back to US, either I need to keep my H-1 active, right?
Advance parole is what you can use.
Okay, all right. Is it not considered as abandonment of 485, like leaving out of country?
No, as long as your advance parole is still alive, you can stay outside USA.
I can stay for a long time also?
As long as the AP is alive, yes, sir.
Oh, okay. So, what is the difference between, like, you know, this leaving just like this and applying CP, consular processing abroad in Canada?
Consular processing, the advantage is you don't have to keep coming back to keep your advance parole alive.
Okay, all right.
The disadvantage is you don't get AC-21 rights.
Right, exactly. What I will be doing, like, just suggest me here. I don't want to come back until I get my green card then.
Convert to consular then.
Okay, any drawbacks here doing CP now?
Just the one that I mentioned, which is not having the option of doing AC-21 portability.
Okay, other than timing-wise, it's almost the same thing?
There's no difference, I mean, as far as I know. It's the same time.
Okay. So my home post would be considered Canada or India, where I was born?
You can make it Canada because that's your country of origin.
Okay, all right, cool. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good luck. Folks, anybody else, or shall I go back to my questions? All right, I'm going to go back to my questions.
Hello?
Oh. Sorry, I heard a hello towards the end as I was leaving. Did somebody have a question? Star 6?
Yes, this is Raj again.
Yeah, Raj.
I just wanted to, you know, understand. I mean, I can take it at the end, this question. Consular processing, I wanted to understand how I can go about doing that and my...
It's very simple. It's just one form, Form I-824, that your lawyers file. Don't do it yourself. Let your lawyers do it.
Okay.
Let them convert your case to consular processing. It's just one form. Not a big deal at all.
Okay. And given that my 485 is pending right now and, you know, priority date is 2003 and they sent an RFE also last month, will it be a good idea to go for a consular processing or I should stick to what I have currently right now and go ahead with that?
I don't know the answer to that question. That depends upon a whole host of factors. But generally speaking, there is no disadvantage in converting.
And is it a parallel processing or, you know, once I switch to consular processing, my regular is switched off and then I continue with the parallel?
You should be going with one or the other, not
one or the other. Okay, okay. And what are the expenses like doing that?
I don't know. If you ask me today, I don't know the filing fees for a single application. Ask me that question. I have no idea.
Okay, sir. All right. No problem.
Somebody else takes care of those things. I don't.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Good luck. All right, folks. I'm going to go back to the presentation. At the end of this, we'll have another question and answer session, of course. So let's go to Dear 1234. H-1 to H-4 stamping. Came to USA on H-4. Okay. Converted to F-1 as I started my master. Worked on CPT, then converted to H-1B, but has no pay stubs from October 2008. That means you're out of status. Now, is it better to change to H-4 in USA? No. You're out of status. You should get your visa in India. Get your H-4 stamping in India. Now, your question is it difficult to get H-4 stamping? Well, for you, it shouldn't be a problem. Being out of status does not create a problem for getting an H-4 visa stamp. But be truthful. Don't lie about anything. Okay? The rule is you don't have to volunteer information, but you should certainly not tell them a lie. If they ask you a question directly, answer truthfully, completely. And I don't see any reason how they can withhold your H-4. Just one second. I think the entrance and exit chimes somehow came on. Let me just turn the chimes off. Yeah, I have to turn the chimes on off. Every time somebody calls in, we get a chime. So, all right. Entry exit chimes are off. Let's get back to your H-1, H-4 questions. Is it a good time to visit India? Will there be any problem for me or my husband? I don't know your husband's case. Generally speaking, the right thing to do for you is to get your H-4 stamping from India. Okay? That's the bottom line. H-1 case, you're going to have to discuss with his lawyers. I don't know what the merits of his case are. Okay. Jersey, 1980. My friend got her citizenship. Son, 22-year-old, is in India. He'll be in USA on F-1. She wants to apply for a green card. Wait. When you apply for a green card for a son of a U.S. citizen, unmarried son, that's, look at the visa bulletin. Okay, visa bulletin, go to immigration.com. You should see visa bulletin. Just do a search on the page for the word visa bulletin. It's in 3-4 different places. You can click on the visa bulletin and you will see family-based category 1 is unmarried sons and daughters of citizens. And that is backed up to, I just checked actually, November 2002 for India bond people. That means backed up 7 years. For 7 years, he has no legal status. He'll get his green card in 7, 8, 9 years, but he doesn't have any legal status to stay in the U.S. It's not that fast. Okay? Uday 01. I am currently on H-1 for company A, who sponsored my AOS, and I have EAD. How risky is it to move to company B on EAD? It's not risky in my opinion. I mean, if the jobs are similar, go for it. You know, if your I-140 is approved, 45 has been pending, 180 days, jobs are similar, go for it. Once my H-1 of company A expires, after a few months, can I transfer to another company? Yes, you can. Even if there's a gap, you can, but you will have to go outside USA to get your visa stamp, which is also not a problem in most cases, of course. Vinoj, next question. H-4 dependent traveling while H-1 transfer application has RFE pending. Vinoj, I think you asked me this question in the beginning of the conference. Certainly somebody asked me this question before I started recording the conference. But let me just double check. Transferred my H-1B from company A to B, received an RFE. RFE is targeted to my current company B. They have responded. Case is still pending. Old H-1B visa with previous employer is valid. They're not canceling it yet. Wife's passport is also stamped with old visa, still valid. Wife is in India. She wants to travel. Can she come back? Sure. I don't see any problem with it. What are the documents required at the port of entry? Nothing special, just her visa and her passport is all that she can use. Can the immigration officer deny entry at the POE because my visa transfer is still pending? See, I don't have any problem with the pending, but if it gets denied, then she will have a problem getting into USA. My nightmare is only this. If she starts from India, and while she's en route, your application gets denied, she lands here, she could be denied entry because your H-1 has been denied. And that's my only concern. Other than that, I think it's perfectly fine to travel with that visa. Nand Pankaj says, can my present employer file another GC process under EB-2, keeping the previous EB-3 process active? That depends upon the size of the company. If you have a large employer who's got several open jobs, let's say you are working as a software engineer, and they have an EB-3 going for that, a position opens up that you are potentially qualified for as a project manager, they can file an EB-2 for you and still keep the EB-3 active. I don't see any problem with that. But when, if it's a 20-employee company, that's a difficult case to make. Okay? As long as it's truthfully done and there is enough, you know, number of jobs available, I don't see why not. Okay? By the way, partially completed degrees don't help at all. You either have a degree or you don't have a degree. So partially completed degrees will not help you in a green card process. Next question is semi-CONC-NT04. That is a long handle. He's going to turn in his N-400. Residence since date, he's not very clear about. The PR card and the temporary stamp both show the same date. However, the notice date is off by about 3 weeks. That's very strange. Can I safely assume the date printed on the PR card? I'll probably go with that date. I would probably go with the date printed on the PR card. But, you know, I don't know exactly what's going on here, why the dates are off, but I would attach a small statement saying that there seems to be some discrepancy. Point that out to the INS. that there is a discrepancy. Use the date that is printed on the green card, but point out that there is a discrepancy in a letter. You can make it in a cover letter and attach a copy of the approval notice. It shouldn't be a big deal. I think it should be fine. As long as you meet the requirements of 5 years or 90 days within, you know, 90 days before the 50th anniversary, you shouldn't have a problem. Faiza, the filed N-400 got married in October 2006, away from USA for 161 days, came back after a week, went back again because of wife's ill health. Is this okay? This should be okay because you have a good explanation. As long as you did not give up your permanent residence in the United States, I think the explanation sounds good. If the wife was sick and, you know, you were taking care of her, and, you know, it all depends upon your circumstances. But generally speaking, if there's a good explanation, that should be fine. NASA Jeep, H-1B transfer. Once I file H-1B transfer with new company, can I start working for the new company from very next day? Yes. You can start working once INS receives the H-1B transfer paperwork. Or if you want to be more conservative, wait until you actually get the receipt. How much time does it take to transfer? If you do premium processing, just a few weeks. If you do normal, a few months. GC underscore single. Spouse of GC L1 project ending. Wife is on L1. Project will be getting over in October. She can't stay here being a spouse of a green card holder. Correct. We want to change her to F1. Will there be any issues? Yes. INS can ask you. You know, prove that she has an intention to return home and she has a permanent home. So getting an F1 is not that easy. If the transfer is approved, can she get a visa stamping? Very difficult to say. I think it's difficult to get a visa stamping because her spouse lives in the USA. Will it be advisable to first get F1 visa stamp and then file I-130? I think it gets worse if you file I-130, but it's not any better because, in fact, her spouse does live in the USA. So it's a tough situation. H1, L1 are the two best options for her. Anything else is less than best. And it's very high chance of denial. H1 approved but not stamped, applying for visitor visa. This is somebody who's got a Canadian permanent residence, who's a Canadian permanent residence. She's living in Canada. H1 was approved in 2008, valid till 2011. Got the visa stamp, but they want to come for a visitor, come on a visitor visa for brother's marriage. First of all, when you apply for a tourist visa, technically, consulates are supposed to cancel all existing visas. That's not a problem. You can go back and reapply for the H-1 again. But an existing H-1 is not a big deal for the issuance of B visa. I don't think it's a problem. Okay? What is more of a problematic issue is that if there is really a job for you, how come the employer is letting you join 8, 10 months, 12 months later? So if you try to enter on H-1B in the future or try to apply for another H-1B, if your H-1B is canceled in the B process, when you apply for B visa, and you try to get the H-1 again, consulate can raise the issue. Why is it that your employer is waiting? How can they afford to wait if they have a job for you? Okay. Is there a negative start work on H-1 much later? Yeah, I just told you that. Since my H-1 approval, things have changed. Will that affect me? I don't see any other problem, but there has to be a problem of explanation. How do you explain that the employer is willing to wait that long? Suverne says, okay, 45 is pending. Traveled to India using advanced parole. Still working on H-1B, even though I have an EAT. Planning to go to India at least for 1 year. Do you see any problem with the green card? I just said this to several people. The only problem I see is they have to have a good explanation, truthful, of course, as to why the employer can hold the job open when it's supposed to be a permanent job. And you've got to keep your advance parole alive during your stay in India. Okay? Next question is from Nilesh, H-1B visa stamping. I'm on H-1B, expired in September 2008, got extension for 3 more years. Planning to go to Vancouver for stamping. Can I go to stamping before expiration of current stamp visa? That means before September 2008. There's some rule on that. I think it's 60 days before expiration you can't go. You can double check with the consulate. I think the time period is 60 days. Is there increased scrutiny for visa stamping? Yes. Yes. Do you think it's safer to go to India or Canada? I can't comment about that relation. I think either country, it depends upon the officer you get. Okay? It's difficult for me to comment about that. Last question that was forwarded to me at the last moment from Shri. Company A started my green card process. By the way, this is not on the forum. This was brought to me personally. Company A started my GC process in October 2004 through EB3. Got labor approved, I-140 approved, EAD and APR approved, but I'm not using them. 45 is pending since July 2007. Got married in 2008, unable to add my spouse as dates are not current. Thinking of applying for a second green card process with the same company through EB2. Negative impact on filing a second green card. I've already answered this question for somebody else. If the company is large enough and they do really have a job for you in an EB2 category, sure, go for it. Okay, this is a very, very fact-bound question. We do it all the time, but we do it only if there's a genuine case for it. Okay? So, is it viable? Is it advisable? It all depends upon the size of your company and the case you are presenting to the IRS. Okay? Well, I am done with my questions, surprisingly. I thought 27, 28 questions will take a lot longer, but we zipped through them. I'm going to open the call for questions. Please confine your questions only to issues that have been posted. And, once we are done with those, I'm going to have to go on. Star 6 to talk with me, folks. Star 6.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
This is Arhan.
Yes, sir.
This is regarding the new field memo.
Right.
So as of now, I'm on EAD.
Right.
And I applied AC-21 last week, and I'm having a valid advance parole.
Right.
So my status is valid, right?
It is valid. It is authorized period of stay. There's nothing to worry about.
Okay, so every year I just maintain my advance parole and a EAD. That should be fine for me.
That should be fine, sir. If you also want to do an H-1, that's not a bad idea. But if that's not possible, don't worry about it. It's okay.
Yeah, H-1 is not possible at this point, so that's why I'm maintaining these two.
I'm not concerned. I think there shouldn't be any problems. As I explained to you, I think this is more of a memo that explains what INS thinks rather than disturbing any rights. Your rights are still the same.
Okay. And in one more thing, my wife is planning to travel to India on AP,
mm-hmm.
and her AP is expiring somewhere in October. Should I file before or should I file after she comes back before October?
Look, I think it's better for you to file after she comes back. Okay.
After she comes back, right?
Yeah, but INS has said that it is okay for you to apply and then leave. As long as you don't try to use that second AP to re-enter.
Okay.
So if you apply today, she leaves and she comes back before October, and eventually the one that you applied for gets approved, fine, you can use it.
But if that didn't approve, what happened? She can use the old one, right?
As long as she enters before October, yeah?
Yeah, okay. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Hi, Rajiv.
Go ahead, sir.
This is semi-concurrent 04.
Okay.
And this question, I just wanted confirmation from you that I could send in the N-400 based on that the resident since date on the PR card, correct?
See, what I would do is, do the 90-day calculation. You know the 90-day calculation,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Do the 90-day calculation with the more conservative date.
Oh, so that means that will be the notice date then.
Do the more conservative. Just because I don't want you to want them to come back and say, oh, you filed too early, now file again.
I see.
Okay. So do the more conservative, but point out to them that this is a discrepancy.
Okay. If I do the conservative, Rajiv, then I don't need to point out, right? I would be safe anyway, correct?
You would be safe, but I like to point these things out. Just
I see.
Because you've noticed this discrepancy. Might as well, your record should be clean. That's
I
the
see.
Way I look at it.
IT. So you don't think that they would allow it just because they printed the date there and I'm going by the date?
INS does not stand by its mistakes.
Oh, I see.
Unlike President Bush.
Okay.
President Bush said that in public. He says, I stand by my mistakes.
Right, right. Okay.
Hello?
Sure, thanks, Rajiv.
You're welcome.
Rajiv, Bob, this is Bob.
Yeah, Bob, go ahead.
Hey, this is regarding the same EB3 to EB2 with a big company which you were talking about sometime before.
Right.
Our company is like a 35 people company with a 12 million revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So my EB3 is already approved with a 2004 prior date, but my company can give me any position I want to file me in EB2.
If your company genuinely has a position for you, okay, and it looks to me you're not in the IT business, are you?
Yeah, we are in IT.
Well, you know, revenue of, did you say 12 million for a 35 employee company?
Right.
That's a very good revenue, very healthy revenue.
Okay.
Because typically 400,000 per employee, that's very good revenue. Okay. It looks like you're doing something right, so the company may be very healthy. I mean, I'm making a guess here, and you must be into some kind of a product, are you?
We are like not in a product, we are services-based company, like a fulfillment and whatever.
Okay, and you don't have any your own products, do you?
No.
Okay, and are you doing ERP consulting?
No, we are not doing any consulting. Basically, we are like into fulfillment and, you know.
So basically, you take projects.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, basically you are the company that comes in and say, okay, you got one is done, we'll take it, we'll get it done, and we'll bring it back to you.
Yes, you're right.
Okay. Yeah, I can understand. That's a much healthier profit margin there, because that kind of profit margin has to come only if the company is either making something, or like you, they are engaged in products, or they are an ERP level company, you know, business
right, right.
ERP. So I think, look, if there is a genuine job, I would very strongly encourage you to talk with your lawyers, explain your situation. Make sure they understand, you know, to present the case that is genuine. I don't want ever to be in a situation where you are just making things up to get an EB2 green card. Okay? As long as 35 employee company, normally I would not say is big enough to support two green cards for different positions, but where the company's revenues are so healthy, as long as the jobs are, you know, genuine, I would see no problem with doing it.
So I don't have to withdraw my previous 140, right?
No, sir, I wouldn't do that.
Okay, so the new 140, if it's denied for some reason, so our 140, the other one is not affected, right?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Hello?
Thank you so much. You're welcome.
Hello, Rajiv. This is consultant 007.
Yes.
I asked you a question about I-140 denied labor substitution.
You are the James Bond of consultants, huh?
No, Rajiv, I joined the conference call late, so, you know, I mean, I couldn't hear your answer.
That's okay. I answered your question, but let me just do a quick search for what was.
Sure.
Give me one second.
Yeah, well, you know, my I-140 was denied, saying that, you know, I used...
Oh, sweet. Okay, yeah. I just answered your question, actually. And the question was, can I do a second green card through the same company? And the answer is, as long as there is a genuine job, an EB2 level job, I don't see any problem with it. But if the company is very small, or they are just making things up, just listen to the conference that I have, you know, we've discussed this issue.
No, Rajiv, I had a question that, you know, my I-140 was denied, saying that, I mean, I used the labor substitution.
I did a search for the string 007, and it brought me to 2007. I'm sorry. I see what is your question. Your question is...
Consultant 007.
Yeah, no, I see it. I see it now. I have actually answered your question, but I'll just repeat it again. My filed labor substitution...
With company A.
Yeah, I said... I know your situation. I said that, look, when company A takes over company B, or company B takes over company A, there should be no issue of company A being able to pay wages, because they are gone. That company is gone. So I think your lawyers are right, and I think you should win this case, I mean, as far as I can tell.
Right, and I have, you know, similar, I mean, same case has been approved with my, you know, couple of other colleagues, and, you know.
I think this is just somebody at INS who doesn't know the law, just making decisions without thinking about what they're doing.
Right, and then one more question, Rajiv, is that my I-140 got denied, and after that, you know, I did not see my I-485 got denied. But I only see that, you know, it says that, you know, the papers have been sent to AAO for review. So that means it's still pending, right? It's not denied, right?
The way it works is, 45 goes into suspension while your appeal is pending. If the appeal is granted and you win the appeal, then they will reinstate your 45 automatically.
Okay. Okay, now...
Hello?
Ma'am, just 1 second. Let me finish.
Sure.
Rajiv, I also have another question that, you know, let's say if I file I-140 with another company, right, with firm and I-140 with other company, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in case my 485 gets denied, so is there a chance that I can interfile my, I-140 with the 485 which is denied?
No, you can't. Once the 485 is denied, it's gone. You can't use it for interfiling.
Right. I read in some online forum saying that, the affected parties might be able to get the 485.
No, that can happen only if you do an interfiling before the I-140 is denied.
Okay.
Once the I-140 is denied, as far as I know, INS will not permit interfiling.
Right. And if you are saying that's right.
Well, I can always be wrong. Every couple of years, I am wrong about one or two things. It doesn't happen very very frequently, but it does happen. So I am always, whenever I give advice for an existing client, if I have even 1% doubt, I double check. So my suggestion would be to double check it, but I am fairly certain this can't be done.
Sure. Okay, Rajiv, I also saw your C-SAN video. It's superb.
Oh, you like it? Good. Yeah, that was done a long time ago, actually 4 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, really? Okay, thank you, Rajiv. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck. Bye-bye.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am, go ahead.
Hi, Rajiv. This is DR123 regarding H4 stamping in India.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so as I'm not working since October 08, I do not have any paychecks and W-2 for
that. Yeah, you are out of status, ma'am. And the only way to bring you back into status is to take you outside USA and bring you back in.
Okay. So my question is, if I go for H4 stamping in India, and if some reason they'll ask me for my previous status on H1 in US,
mm-hmm.
What should I say? I mean,
let me ask you a question. What
sure.
what was your status? What happened? Why did you not work for 8 months or 10 months?
Yeah, because I was working earlier on CPT, and I filed my H-1B with the consultant, and then from October, I was looking for the project, but due to bear market, I am not able to get it.
That's your answer. That's exactly the answer you will give. The truth, nothing but the truth.
Okay.
And even if you tell the truth, which you should always do, it should not stop them from giving you an H-4. They can't.
Okay. And my husband has a 3 years completed on his H-1B, so we are planning to visit India. So is there any difficulties?
Were you in the conference when I answered your questions?
Yeah.
Okay, I already answered these questions. I'm not sure why you're repeating them. And the answer is I have no way of saying and telling whether your husband will get an H-1 because I don't know what his case is. Talk to his lawyers about that.
Okay. Okay, and
hello?
If we both go together for stamping, does my H4 or out of status can affect his H1 stamping?
No, ma'am. It cannot.
Okay. Thank you so much, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Good luck to you.
Hi, Rajiv.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Bye-bye.
Hi. Go ahead.
Hi, Rajiv.
Yeah.
Hi. Another question regarding the consular processing.
Mm-hmm.
Do I need to cancel my H1 visas or any H1 extensions before I leave country?
Why keep them hanging on? If you're not coming back, might as well.
Okay, all right. Just to keep, is it illegal to go out of country when you're not working and, or is it optional?
Is it illegal to go out of the country when you're not
working? I mean, keeping the H-1 active.
No, it is not illegal.
Okay, but it might impose any problems in the future.
I don't think it imposes any problems. If you're going to be outside the country, I don't see any issue with keeping the H-1 just the way it is.
Okay, so I can get an extension and then leave without canceling it.
Correct.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else, folks? Very good.
Raju, this is Bob again.
Yep.
Just a general question regarding the pre-adjudication. Do you have any assumption everything is going to get 2007 filers, June 2007 filers?
Do I have any comments about how long it will take? I have no idea.
No, not the how long it's going to take. Like, I see like a lot of people are having the, you know, LUTM, last update data change.
Right.
There are 485 cases, so do you have any clue on that? Like, is it being pre-adjudicated right now, or?
I understand that they are pre-adjudicating almost all cases that they can. That's my understanding.
And do you have any clue, like, what would be the prior date would be, like, in that is the starting October?
I was surprised nobody had asked me this question. I get asked that question every conference call. No, sir, I have no idea what the prior date is going to do.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Hi, folks. Everybody, thanks a lot for your time. I always enjoy talking with you. Bye-bye.